My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich, joined today by a first-time guest on the show. I know him from the VOW Discord. It's Pastor Josh. Hello, Josh.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for having me, man.
Glad you're here. Definitely. It's actually some interesting timing here because this is the second episode in a row to have a man of God as the guest. Because the last time I had on Jeremy Sexton, who used to be in the ministry, and as I said, you are a pastor, so we're keeping the heavenly vibes going here, you might say.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this or not, but Jeremy and myself, we're going to be the new heavenly bodies. I think that's what we're going for. So
big scoop.
Yeah,
big scoop.
Yeah, I'm no longer Pastor Josh. I'm Dr. Josh, and he'll be Jeremy the Gigolo. So I think it should work out pretty well.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, if I may ask this, how long have you been a pastor and when did you figure out you wanted to do this?
Yeah. So I've been a pastor since 2021. So it really goes back further. I grew up attending church. I grew up a Christian. I grew up in a Christian home. I was a missionary. I spent time in Brazil, some time in Cambodia. But really, I didn't go into ministry until I was in my, you know, my late 30s. I actually started out really in journalism. Journalism was my main background. It's what I wanted to do from the time I was really a teenager. I was the editor for our school newspaper, and each year in our county, they had this competition for school newspapers to see who could produce the best content. And I had a little bit of a design background, and I'm creative and I'm a writer. And so I actually spent a lot of time designing this newspaper and writing this newspaper. And so what's really kind of humorous about that is my senior year, the same teacher that taught journalism also taught accounting. And I had those classes back to back. And so I actually failed accounting the first semester because I'm really bad with numbers, which is ironic now because considering I'm married to an accountant, which maybe that's a good thing. So he made a deal with me that if I would work on the newspaper for both of those blocks, so essentially 3 hours a day, he would give me the same grade in both classes. And so I actually got 100% in journalism, which in turn meant I got 100% in accounting, which I was like, great, whatever. Well, it was all good. It was all fun and games until graduation rolled around. And I also found out I won the school accounting award, which I probably should not have won. But yeah, I was a journalist for many years. I was in West Virginia. My first gigs were here in Columbus. I was working for a website called Columbus Underground. And I was covering sports. My first gig was covering the Columbus Crew. And then I moved to West Virginia. I kind of went through this period of like spiritual dryness where I wasn't attending church. I moved back to West Virginia. started working at a newspaper and got really sucked into that world. Eventually, I met this woman named Jen, who I ended up marrying, who kind of led me back into this world of faith. And when we got married, I moved back to Ohio. I was no longer a journalist. And so I was kind of looking for direction. I worked for a PR firm for a while, then ended up buying the PR firm. COVID hit, and like so many things, it just shuttered my business. And so I was like, I don't know which direction to go. At this time, I was heavily involved in church, high level leadership. And so my wife and I started talking about it. She's like, maybe you should look into going into ministry. And so I started going to seminary. I went to a seminary called Grace Theological Seminary, which is in Winona Lake, Indiana. I did that online and then transferred to Grimke Seminary, which is in Richmond, Virginia, and became a pastor of the church I'm at now in 2021. So I'm associate pastor. I work mostly with teenagers, with students, and I also preach, and I'm a part of a leadership team. We have about 250 people in our congregation. And then in 2027, my wife and I are actually leaving that congregation to go to the next town over, which is Newark, Ohio, and starting a church there. So my journey has been, I'm not like most pastors. People tell me that a lot. Like, oh, I hear a lot like, oh, well, you're a different type of pastor. Maybe it's because I haven't been a pastor for that long, and maybe I'm just trying to figure that out. But that's a little bit of my story.
Mm-hmm. A long and winding road, I think, is a good descriptor there, definitely. Yeah, I know at least one person who I grew up with who went into the clergy. It was actually the girl I went to junior prom with, funny enough. She became a rabbi. So that's my clergy connection beyond yourself there, I guess, Josh.
Hey, there's a bunch of us out there.
Yeah. But besides being a pastor, I also know that you are a big Red Sox fan. But you live in Ohio. Do you have roots around Boston, or what's the story there?
I have absolutely no roots to Massachusetts whatsoever, which is really funny. That whole New England thing, man, I felt like I was a New England poser when I was growing up because I loved the New England Patriots. Drew Bledsoe was my favorite player. And then around like 1999 or so, my family got the MLB package on DirecTV. And man, I was just glued to the Red Sox games. There's just something about Fenway Park that was so beautiful to me. And so I got super into the Red Sox. They were my team for as long as I could remember. 2003 with Aaron Boone just absolutely crushed me. It broke my heart. And then 2004 was like the highest of highs. I have a friend, really a guy I know that was at the World Series, game four, and he called me as soon as it was over, and he was like, man, this is the happiest day of my life. So yeah, I loved the Red Sox, but as most people in the Discord know, I kind of oscillate between Boston sports and Cleveland sports. It's exhausting. But when I moved back to Ohio in 2016, I was like, man, I should probably just like adopt this local team. And so 2016 was a good year to jump in with the Cleveland baseball team because they went to the World Series that year. And so it just kind of became another thing for me. We named our dog after Francisco Lindor. Like, it was just a really big thing. But man, I love the Red Sox. I love the Guardians. I hate the Browns, even though they're my team. But I also have this love for the Patriots and just New England in general. I've never been, Andrew. I feel like I need to make the trip, I need to make it to that part of the country because I feel like it's played such a big role in my life.
Well, we're waiting for you, man. We're not going anywhere anytime soon. Yeah, right. But
that's good. That's good.
Yeah, but we're recording this after the Red Sox clinched a wild card spot, so we'll see how far into the playoffs they go. I will say I did jinx the Celtics when I talked about their playoff run a few months ago, so who knows what's going to happen there, Josh? Who knows?
Not me.
But anyway, today's episode here, it's a little on the nose, given Josh's profession, perhaps, but it's a fun one. And I actually have a clip, a little montage, to introduce the topic here, so hit it, Johnny.
Oh my God!
Yes, that was ECW commentator Joey Styles saying his famous catchphrase, and a little bit of Janice from Friends at the end there with her famous catchphrase, why not? Yeah, this episode, it's called Oh My God, which is something that I think a lot of wrestling fans say when there's a crazy dangerous spot or a big shocking moment or something like that. It's just a natural reaction to have. And in Joey Styles' case, a pretty appropriate catchphrase, I think, given all the crazy stuff that happened in ECW back in the day. Now, let me ask you this, Josh. When we say, oh my God, does that count as taking the Lord's name in vain?
Honestly, probably, but I'm not going to hold it against you. And so I think we'll take it from there.
Oh, good, good. I just want to be aware of these things, you know. But in any case, we are playing songs that have the word God in the title. Now, they don't have to be religious songs or gospel or Christian rock or whatever. Just the word God will do, or gods. And you might be shocked to hear this, Josh, but I don't have a vast collection of religious music anyway. So most of the songs I picked are quite secular.
Yeah, you might be shocked to hear this from me as well, Andrew, but I actually don't listen to much Christian music. Maybe that doesn't surprise you. So most of mine are secular as well.
All right, so we're on an even scale there, I suppose, in that regard. That's good. But
absolutely.
But we have 8 songs each and a playout song at the end here. So let's get to it. Josh, you are the guest. You'll go first. What's your first pick?
Yeah, so my first pick is Dear God by Monsters of Folk. This felt like the perfect start because it's literally written like this letter to God. It's raw, it's questioning, it's kind of conversational. It's from this indie supergroup that came about around like 2007, 2008, 2009, called Monsters of Folk, which was Jim James from My Morning Jacket and Connor and Mike from Bright Eyes and M. Ward. It's the only album they ever produced. It came out in 2009. And what's really cool about this song is even it kind of fits this theme even further because the track actually samples like this old gospel song as well. And so I picked it because I think, one, it's a bop, as the kids say. I don't know if the kids actually say that, Andrew. You're younger than me. Maybe you've never said those words. I think it's a good song. It's a vibe. But also captures this kind of restless, searching vibe that a lot of people have when they think about God. I was just kind of vibing out when that song hit. I love that song so much. Hey, I think one of the things I first noticed about this song, when it hits, Jim James' voice comes on. And if you've listened to My Morning Jacket much at all, you know that voice instantly. Man, I love this song. It's so melancholy. It's kind of depressive. It's this conversational letter to God. And man, I think this is a great way to start.
Yeah, I had never heard of this supergroup before, but you're right. As soon as I heard Jim James, I was like, I know that voice. And yeah, it is quite melancholic. You know, the harmonies and the fluttery and flowery instrumentation, they are very beautiful. But the lyrical themes of losing faith in God and if your love's still around, why do we suffer? It's quite somber, you know. And I think when you have all four of these guys, you know, Jim and Connor and Mike of Bright Eyes and M. Ward, it's not surprising that a supergroup of these guys would sound like this, but I still enjoy it, Josh, for sure.
Yeah, I think that theme too of this questioning God, of losing faith. Honestly, for me at that point in my life when this came out in 2009, I was in that season. I was on a personal note, I was going through a divorce. I was moving back into West Virginia, moving in with my parents again, which was really hard after being out on my own for so many years. But this song, actually, when you read these lyrics and you hear these lyrics, maybe for somebody this doesn't even sound biblical, but when you actually compare it to like things you would see in the Old Testament or things that like David wrestled with in the Psalms, there's this nice connection there.
Mm-hmm. And looking them up, this is the only album they ever did, which I think tends to be the way with supergroups, you know, that not often that a supergroup will stick around and keep making albums. They tend to be short-term things that last, you know, one or two albums or so there, Josh.
Yeah, I wish that they would come out with another album so bad. Like, that's like one of my biggest wishes in the world. What, there's another version of the song. I didn't pick this one because I prefer this particular version. But there's a remix of this as well, that the Monsters of Folk came together with The Roots, and Black Thought has a verse on it, and it's really good. But man, I wish that these guys would keep making music together. I know Bright Eyes just came out with a new album, and M Ward kind of, you know, he went the route with Zooey Deschanel, and My Morning Jacket's obviously still around. But man, I wish these guys would keep making music together. They just fit who I am so much, and I just love the sound. That whole album, nothing sounds the same. Which is really cool. If you get a chance, if you hear this and you're like, man, I want to check these guys out, find their Austin City Limits performance. I think it's on YouTube. I actually watched it right after the CMLL anniversary show. I was like searching through YouTube, and that's what I chose to watch right after that. But yeah, definitely go check that out. It's awesome.
A bloody mystico right into Jim James. It's the natural path, of course, so Josh.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Of course. All right, my first pick, a very appropriate band name. This is Manic Street Preachers. And I picked a song off their 1986 album, Everything Must Go. And this is The Girl Who Wanted to Be God.
There are no sunsets, just she was true and faithless, but see through that future and forget all the lies. Black out the words, for the blind have eyes. I am the God.
The Girl Who Wanted to Be God. That's a Sylvia Plath reference, for those that don't know. And for a song about a poet who was deeply depressed and killed herself, it's quite exuberant. You know, the soaring chorus really gets you pumped up there. And that's my preferred style of the Preachers. I like the more anthemic, boisterous stuff, depressing content or otherwise. You know, I like that kind of sound of theirs. And this album marks a change in direction for the band into that kind of sound, you know, because it's the first album after their lyricist and guitar player, Richie Edwards, disappeared. No one knows what happened to him. He just disappeared one day. The leading theory is suicide, but yeah, his era of the band is bleaker, and they were doing more post-punk, hard rock, grunge, all sorts of stuff. With this album, the band shifted gears and embraced Britpop more. And it got them pretty big, too. So, yeah, I like this album as my jumping on point for the band there, Josh.
Yeah, I love the sonic sound of this. I love the instrumentation, especially with something that's wrestling with kind of these harder lyrics and tying it into that brighter, kind of poppier sound, like you mentioned. To me, it's really interesting that this came after losing one of their members. They had this kind of, like you said, brighter, poppier sound when this guy who was part of them for so long just disappeared. I did not know that until you told me that. That's absolutely incredible. I need to do a deep dive on that.
Yeah, he just went away one day and no one can find him. And it took years before they declared him dead. So yeah, it's a really sad, crazy story. But the band is still going. It's the same three guys still going after all these years. And they just put out a new album this year, actually. It's pretty good, too. So yeah, check those guys out for sure when you get a chance. But all right, Josh, what's your next pick there?
So the next song I chose is In God's Country by U2. I picked this one because I think U2 has always kind of blurred this line between spiritual imagery and social commentary. This is from Joshua Tree album, which came out in 1987. I think it's their best album. I think, man, people kind of make fun of U2 now because Bono's kind of become this caricature of Bono and the whole like iTunes thing years ago. But man, I just think they're incredible. I think this song is really good. It's kind of maybe the title alone kind of makes you lean into it a little bit. Like, is he singing about, you know, America? Is he singing about some sort of spiritual home or both? And I think it's a reminder that something invoking God in a song is as much about wrestling with place and identity as it is, you know, prayer or praise. I think you can really hear on this song, it was produced in a way that it sounds massive. It sounds huge. This is kind of that trademark U2 atmosphere. I think this, the Brian Eno was behind the production on this. And I think this gave the band this like wide open desert feel, which maybe that fits that Joshua Tree vibe. Man, I love the Edge's guitar on this. It's like chimey. It's got some delay to it. Larry Mullen Jr., his drums are tight, they're driving, and Adam Clayton's bass, he's holding it like incredibly steady. I think the thing with this song too, it's deceptively simple, but the layering, the way that it's produced, makes it feel bigger than it really is. And I think it's kind of the genius of what U2 was doing in this era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think even if you had never heard this song before, from the very first note, you would say, oh, that's a U2 song.
Yeah.
Because that guitar sound is just so recognizable and iconic. And the lyrics are so U2 and Bono as well. Desert Rose, dreamed I saw a desert rose, dressed torn in ribbons and in bows, like a siren she calls to me. Like, it's so them, you know? And it's a song ostensibly about the immigrant coming to America and trying to achieve the American dream, which I think hits different nowadays, perhaps, but... yeah, it's yet another good song by U2, Josh, for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of those. Imagine that.
yeah, and this was also a single in North America, but it doesn't feel as overplayed as like Where the Streets Have No Name or I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For or With or Without You. Like, those songs still have such a massive presence that even the other singles on the album are kind of deep cuts in a way, I guess, Josh.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, if you've ever heard Bono talk about the song, he wasn't a big fan of the song. He didn't hold it really high in regard musically, but he felt like they needed some up-tempo material on that album. And if you listen to the album, it makes sense. Like, this song, it's definitely up-tempo compared to those other ones. Man, I just think it's so good. Like you said, it's not overplayed. But yeah, great album. Great album.
All right, my next pick here. Your first pick was a song called Dear God. My second pick is also a song called Dear God. This is by the band XTC off of their 1986 album Skylarking. So let's hear their song called Dear God.
Dear God, hope you got the letter and I the people that you mean your image, see them starving on their feet, cause they don't get enough to eat from God. Can't believe in me.
Dear God, sorry to disturb you, but I feel that I should be loud and clear. We all need a big reduction in amount.
Yeah, great song. First of all, produced by Todd Rundgren, which is pretty cool. And it's funny, we both picked a song called Dear God, and they're both about challenging the existence of God because of all the horrible things happening down here on Earth in God's name, all the wars and fighting. The difference is, I think this song, it's a lot sharper and angrier in its tone, literally saying, I can't believe in you over and over and over again. And there's the bridge where the music gets all stabby. I won't believe in heaven and hell. Da, da, da. It's quite vitriolic and violent in a way. And I think having a little kid sing part of it as well is that little extra sting in the tail there, Josh.
Yeah, I agree. I think that song, man, it is so sharp. I also want to say, like, as a pastor, I totally get why people feel this way. I get why people write these songs, why they sing these songs. These songs resonate with people in a way that maybe some other songs don't. I think that's perfectly okay. It's perfectly fine. Even as a Christian, as a pastor, as someone who believes in God and preaches God, I still feel those ways at times. You know, I still have these questions and these doubts. And when you look around the world, it's really easy to be like, man, yeah, I get it. I get it. But I loved the instrumentation on this album. This song, I had never heard the song again. Thanks for giving me music I didn't hear before. That's a great thing. But I love the instrumentation, the way it starts off with that acoustic guitar. I first thought, man, this sounds like something that would be right up my alley. And then, like you said, after the child's verse and then musically it picks up, it's beautiful. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And the story goes, this was originally left off the album because they were afraid it would upset American listeners. So it was a B-side in the UK, but the song got imported to the States by American college DJs, and it got popular enough where they repressed the album with the song on it. And sure enough, the uproar ensued. There was a bomb threat in Florida. Andy Partridge, the singer, got a ton of hate mail. And nowadays, it seems maybe a little tame, but you know, you go after people's religion and their beliefs, and they're going to speak out, Josh, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, great song by them. But all right, what's your next pick there, Josh?
I felt like this was the perfect pick for this. Andrew, I don't know if you know this about me. I'm 40 years old, but sometimes I feel like I'm such a boomer at times. And so I picked what I felt like was definitely a boomer band, but I don't feel like we could do this list without picking God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. I think this one makes the list because it's not only like one of the most beautiful love songs ever written. I think Paul McCartney once said it might be the greatest, but it was just, it's produced so well. It's beautiful. It's from Pet Sounds. And so to me, it's wild to think that Brian Wilson and Tony Asher decided to like risk radio play just to make this song sound as powerful as it is.
Not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me. So what good would living do me? God only knows. knows what I'd be without you.
It's wild just how ahead of its time this song really feels. Like, you can hear, like, I know a lot of musicians call this, like, it's one of the greatest instrumentations that they've heard. And it's so lush, really, Andrew, when you think about it. Like, this is a big pop song. This is a, you know, it's one of the greatest songs of all time as far as I'm concerned. And it has instruments like a French horn and strings and sleigh bells and harpsichords. It's all kind of tucked in there, but it's this kind of like tapestry. It's real gorgeous. Nothing really dominates, but everything really kind of matters. And then you've got those layered vocals that the Beach Boys are so known for. It's almost like this choir. I think it's an absolute beautiful love song to me. When I hear this song, I'm just like, imagine like walking through a park holding my wife's hand. Like, maybe it wouldn't be as beautiful as it is in my head, but this song to me, it's just it creates an image that I think is just so great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the first repeat song on the show, actually. We played it about a year ago on a Jeremy episode, funny enough. But it's fine because it's been enough time. And also, yeah, it's one of the greatest songs ever. So it's okay. And a fun fact about this, it was the B-side to Wouldn't It Be Nice in the States. And in other countries, it was the A-side. And I guess that's a good problem to have. You know, when you have two songs of that quality, which side do you put them on? It's a coin toss, Josh, for sure.
Yeah, I think this is also one of those songs. I think it was like one of the first times that kind of in this pop era of that time that this word God was used in a title, but it wasn't used in like a gospel-y way or like a Christian way. And so it's kind of this little controversial thing there. I'll tell you what's really funny about this song with me, Andrew. I grew up going to church, attending like church camps and all this. And the first time I actually heard this song was by this like Texas-based Christian band that nobody's ever heard of called 40 Days, who was a band at my youth camps growing up. They played this song and I was like, this song's incredible. How did you guys write this song? And they're like, well, this song was written many decades ago by somebody way better than us. So yeah, you can't have this list without God Only Knows.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to double this up on the Beach Boys here, because my next song is the title track from their last album in 2012. This is That's Why God Made the Radio. Yeah, the Beach Boys, they certainly had an up-and-down career. A lot of highs, a lot of lows, both professional and personal. But songs like that proved that even decades later, they still had the magic. And they could still capture that Beach Boys sound, with updated production, of course. But the harmonies, the lyrics about driving in the car and listening to music and falling in love and those vibes, it's total Beach Boys. And this album was their biggest hit in almost 50 years, which is crazy. And yes, their last one to date as well. And I'm glad they could get one more album in with Brian before they, you know, fell out again and Brian's death earlier this year. So yeah, very glad for that.
I called myself a boomer earlier, but I just want to point out, you chose a Beach Boys song that's about driving down the road listening to the radio. So I don't know if it gets much more a boomer than that, but man, how can you go wrong with the Beach Boys? Like, their voices are just so classic. The way their harmonies work together. I love that you said that you know, this was when they were getting along, maybe enough to record an album. Because the backstory behind those guys is, oh my gosh, like Mike Love is just, I don't want anything to do with that man. But I love the Beach Boys. I think they're like, maybe it's not a popular pick, but they're like the quintessential American band to me, because I feel like what that represents was such this like Americana world. But it's a good song.
Mm-hmm. And that song is co-written by Jim Peterik from the band Survivor. And there's an interview of him with Huffington Post talking about where the song came from. And he says, quote, "We," him and Brian, "were at an Italian restaurant, and we were talking about radio and how great songs used to sound through the AM radio coming through your oval speaker on your Plymouth Valiant. And I said, man, that was the best sound of all. And Brian said, yeah, that's why God made the radio. Of course, I wrote that down. He didn't realize how brilliant it was, or maybe he did, but that's when we wrote that song." So, the genius of Brian Wilson, just a throwaway line that grew into that song. Josh, it's amazing.
There will never be another person like Brian Wilson ever again. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. But all right, what's your next pick there, Josh?
Yeah, so this next pick, I picked a song called God Ain't Done by a rapper named Miles Minnick. I picked this because that phrase, God ain't done, I think it's this kind of powerful statement. It's hopeful, it's defiance. For Christians, it reminds you, this is the one of two songs I picked for this list that are explicitly Christian music. But it's a hip hop track. I think it's a good representation of where I think Christian music should be going. And I just love the sound. It's got this kind of West Coast vibe that I really like. And so I hope you like it.
My God ain't done, west side of New York. Whole gang praying for you at the food court. You ain't never seen somebody preaching in some hoop shorts. Spirit breaking out on both sides of the hoop court. Yeah, doing it for Jesus. Taking territory, you can't stop what I'm dreaming. Fest at the church, then it's crypto fiend. Feeling them seats. Fresh like California, you know where to meet us.
I picked this song not because I really think it's like a great song. No, you're wrong. It's good. But I wanted to give some Christian hip hop representation on this list. Miles Minnick he's kind of this up and comer, one of the bigger up and coming names right now. And honestly, he's part of this wave of that feels kind of fresh compared to what's happened in a lot of Christian music. So much of it, Andrew, has gotten really watered down. It's safe, it's generic, it's made for radio, but Christian hip hop, on the other hand, I think it's probably a bold statement for me to say this, but I think that a lot of the Christian hip hop is actually some of the best hip hop being made in the world right now. And it's also the best Christian music being made because it's wrestling with these big themes of identity and faith and doubt and social justice and perseverance. I think Miles is kind of like right there in this lane, and he's kind of carrying this torch with guys like No Big Deal, who No Big Deal to me is like the greatest rapper around right now. KB, most people know Lecrae's still there, but these are artists who don't really shy away from talking about real struggles and real hope. And this track, like God Ain't Done, to me, it just kind of nails that God's still working even as they're wrestling with these hard themes of faith and doubt, and he's still moving. The story isn't over, and I think the song, like it's got this good vibe. It's a little happy. I will have that hook stuck in my head all day long. But yeah, I think this was just a great representation of Christian hip hop right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a big Christian rock guy. Christian rap even less so. And it's funny, if you took away the lyrics and just kept the beat, it sounds like any other rap song, you know, no gospel choir or angelic chanting, but you have a guy rapping about doing it for Jesus and confessing at the church and God ain't done with you, even if they try to cancel you, because your father would be the only one you answer to, all of a sudden, it's going to stand out. So I'm not saying that I'm shocked to hear a rap song like this. I'm just not used to it, Josh.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what I'm talking about with hip-hop right now, this rap world and Christian music. They're the ones who are touching on these things that, like, I think it's that inner angst that people, and especially people in our country, have felt over the last, you know, decade or so, especially as they wrestle with faith and what's happening in the world. No Big Deal is another one that it's that he's talking about things that, like, you're not going to hear this on K-Love or whatever Christian radio station. These are songs that are raw, and like you said, they're it's kind of shocking almost when you consider what most people think Christian music is like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I appreciate the good vibes for sure in this song. It's not screaming repent, repent or whatever. It's a nicer tone than that. So I do like that, Josh.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll keep the West Coast vibes going here with my next band. This is one of the premier desert rock bands. It's Queens of the Stone Age. And I went with a song off of their 2013 album, Like Clockwork. This is My God is the Sun. Song rocks like a lot of their songs do. Like I said, you know, they're the biggest desert rock band out there, and this song is essentially an ode to the desert. Far beyond the desert road where everything ends up, so good the empty space. I don't know what time it was. I don't wear a watch. So good to be an ant who crawls atop a spinning rock. So it's appreciating the vastness of the desert and that environment, and getting to slow down and not feel the pressures of big society or whatever. And this is something that I didn't notice until a YouTube comment pointed it out. The end of the song, where it slows down, it sounds like the song is melting under the desert sun, which is pretty clever there, I think. But yeah, that's a really damn good song, I think, Josh.
Yeah, man, I love the way that song starts musically. I think it captured my attention right away. This idea of singing a song about the desert to me feels so foreign. Like, I don't know how it is for you living up where you do. I'm in Ohio. Like, you don't hear me singing about like cornfields here, you know? And so this idea of this being stripped away in this wide open space, to me, it might as well be Mars. It's just so foreign to me. But hearing songs like this, it makes me want to, like, you can visually experience what the songwriter is singing about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I went to Israel in 2009 with my summer camp group, we hiked in the Negev desert for 4 days, and we had supplies, and we would resupply every morning or whatever, but there's not much out there. You know, it's a whole lot of rocks and a whole lot of empty space, and there's no shower. There's no bathroom. You know, the bathroom was over there. Just go over there. That was pretty much the bathroom, you know, and it was really strange. Just, you know, as someone who is so used to amenities and AC and things like that, like, you really feel the vastness of that place and how remote it is from civilization. But it was still, you know, one of the more memorable experiences of my life, for sure, Josh.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely miserable to me, I'm not going to lie. The fact of I enjoy air conditioning and amenities, and maybe I turn into Anakin Skywalker when it comes to sand. I don't know, but I'll stick with my air conditioning in Ohio for right now.
Me too. I don't miss the desert, I'll say that much. So
now just imagine doing that for 40 years.
Oh my God. Moses, where are we going, man? Come on.
Let's go back to Egypt. You know, they got it made there. So
yeah. But all right, what you got next there, Josh?
I went with God's Gonna Cut You Down by Johnny Cash. I felt like we had to get the Man in Black in here. It's kind of Johnny's take on this kind of old traditional folk song. It's one that had made the cut before it shows the other side of invoking God's name in music, warning, judgment, truth telling. And this is from American 5, I believe. This was released after his death in 2006, and it's kind of stark, it's haunting. And it reminds you that God's justice is something you can't outrun.
You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news, my head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels sweet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell.
Andrew, I think this song is just, it's haunting. This production, it's stripped down, it's heavy. It's got these foot stomps and these hand claps, and it's got this like kind of deep acoustic groove, and it feels like you're kind of hearing this sound of judgment itself kind of like coming down the tracks. I know that our Discord people are probably going to cringe when they hear, of course, Pastor Josh picks the like foot stomp hand clap song, you know, because that's kind of known as my lane. But I think this one's a little bit different than like that Mumford sound. Obviously Rick Rubin, who produced this, knew it exactly how to capture Johnny Cash in those later years. It kind of feels like that he's this supreme being that's overseeing this world of like country music and rock music. So when he speaks, you listen. It's this like raw, gravelly, there's nothing polished. It's just the weight of this man who's like, he's lived every word that he's singing. And like I said, this song was released after Johnny's death in 2006, I believe it was. But it's when this album was released. I don't know if you've ever seen the music video for this, but it actually packs a lot of that weight. It's full of all these cameos. Bono is in it, and Kanye West, and Chris Rock, and Johnny Depp, and Flea, and I think Keith Richards, and Patti Smith, and the boss himself shows up. And it's like this Hall of Fame of artists paying tribute to Johnny Cash. They're all dressed in black. They're mouthing the words. And the song itself says, like, you can't outrun God's justice. And so this video makes it feel kind of universal. There's every generation and every style represented, and everyone has to kind of face that truth. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had an initial list of 10 songs, and this was on it. And when you gave me your 8 and I saw that you picked it, I was like, all right, I'll delete that one. The so-called pastor stole my pick. Thank you very much. I see how it is. But
absolutely.
But no, my love for late era Johnny Cash is well known. And yeah, it came out after he died. And it's not just a great song. Yeah, it is quite imposing too. That stomp rhythm gives it some dramatic heft. And the fact that it's Johnny singing from beyond the grave, yeah, there is a haunting element too. So look, I know Hurt is the biggest song from this era of Cash, but I think this has to be number 2 because I've heard it in so many movies and TV shows over the years, Josh.
Yeah, I think didn't The Undertaker actually come out to the song maybe at WrestleMania one
that
year,
was,
or maybe in a video?
That was Ain't No Grave.
Okay, Ain't No Grave, okay.
That was... Yeah. Ain't No Grave, yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe he should have come out with this one too, and maybe we would like him more. I don't know. But yeah, I agree, man. I think that those American recordings are so good. There's so many great songs in there that In My Life, the Beatles cover that he does is really kind of this beautiful look at the end of his life. But I'm with you, man. I think the way that this song, it might be better than Hurt to me, if I'm honest, which I know that might be a controversial thing to say, but I feel like this song is just, it's perfect. And this is like the perfect way for Johnny Cash to go out. You know, this was like, if there's a song that we're going to have as like one of the last recordings of him, this is a perfect, perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Agreed. All right. So we'll go from JC to JP, because my next pick is Judas Priest off of their 1980 album British Steel. This is Metal Gods.
Ripping men apart from others seen my perfection, where we could do as we please. In secrecy, this infection was spreading like a disease. Hiding underground,
Gods, a song about robots taking over the world. We've taken too much for granted, and all the time it had grown. From techno seeds we first planted, evolved a mind of its own. Insert AI analogy here. And that's an important song in the Priest catalog. Not only is it part of the vaunted British Steel album, which I've said before on the show, laid the groundwork for 80s metal in a lot of ways, but it's also where the band got their nickname, The Metal Gods, and where Rob Halford got his nickname, The Metal God. So forget your boring regular god, Josh. My god is the power of heavy metal, baby.
That's funny. Metal Gods gave the band the nickname Metal Gods, and him his nickname of Metal God. It's like that Bad Company produces Bad Company on the album, Bad Company thing. Is that pretty much similar to that? I love Glenn Tipton's guitar solo in the song as well. I think it's really cool. I was looking at the verses. In verse 3, machines are taking all over with mankind in their command. In time, they'd like to discover how they can make their demand. This song came out 45 years ago. So it's hard to imagine what they imagined this song could have been about in 2025. But it feels a little timely.
Yeah. And a fun behind-the-scenes story with this song. The outro, you hear this ominous marching sound, this shunk, shunk. I have a clip, actually. I'll play it right now. Yeah, the shunk, shunk. It's the sound of the robot army marching down to kill us all. It's also the sound of Rob Halford taking a cutlery tray and dropping it in front of the mic over and over again. That's how they made the sound. And it was also, they were staying at Ringo Starr's house, of all people. So those are Ringo's knives and forks that they're using to make this song. Josh, how about that?
That's absolutely incredible. I had no idea that Ringo Starr's silverware was going to make an appearance on this playlist, but I'm glad it did.
Yeah, definitely. Peace and love, don't send me any more forks or spoons, peace and love. All right. Josh, what you got next, man?
Well, I feel like the perfect transition after Judas Priest is to go straight to Coldplay. So I chose God Put a Smile on Your Face. I feel like this is kind of this switching gears, but this is from the 2002 album, Rush of Blood to the Head. To me, it's one of three Coldplay albums, and then nothing exists after those three. And so I love the song. I love Chris Martin's voice in this. I love the music. And so that's why I chose it.
Where do we go to draw the line? I've gotta say I wasted all your time, honey, honey. Where do I go to fall from grace? God put a smile upon your face, yeah.
This is Coldplay at their peak, right around 2002. I think Parachutes to me is still the best Coldplay album. They could have probably stopped right there, but I love the way that this album works. Chris Martin said the song came from asking, like, why do some people thrive while others just kind of fade away? And you can hear that tension in the music. Like, this guitar riff it's kind of jagged, and the drums are punchy, and this whole thing kind of has this darker groove compared to their like usual studio anthems, or actually the stadium anthems that they've put out. And I kind of love this title because it's so simple. It makes you think, if God put a smile on your face, then he's just not concerned with your eternity but with your everyday. And I think that's kind of a big claim. Maybe that's not obviously what Chris and company meant for this, but that is kind of the way I've taken it.
Yeah, this is the other song that I picked that I had to do away with because you picked it first. And yes, I am a Coldplay fan. There are dozens of us.
Let's do it, baby.
Like you, I'm a fan up to a point. Like, I don't want to be one of those guys who's like, the old stuff is the best. But I have fallen off with them the past 10 years or so. I think up to Ghost Stories. That's when I kind of fall off afterwards. But I do feel oddly nostalgic for the early stuff, the more rock-driven sound on their earlier albums. I do miss that era of Coldplay, but as I talked about on the last episode with Jeremy, the Gimmick Changes episode, you know, bands do evolve, for better or worse there, Josh.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, they have evolved. Their sound still, you can obviously tell, like we were talking about U2, like when you hear the Edge's guitars, you know that it's U2. And I feel like that's kind of the same thing with Coldplay, even though as they've evolved. I still think they're probably one of the best live performances I've seen. I remember I saw them and Rilo Kiley years ago at the Polaris Amphitheater here in Columbus. It's no longer there. And was just blown away by like how good these guys are live and the way that sound just kind of carries. I do love these lyrics too. Like, don't ever say you're on your way down. God gave you style and gave you grace and put a smile on your face. To me, there's some joy in that. There's some happiness in that. And I take a lot of personal joy from that because I'm somebody that, like I said, I wrestle with this depressive state and this anxious state. And as a pastor, sometimes I think those things are really, really hard to deal with because I feel like there's this expectation that somebody that's a pastor, somebody that's pursuing God and is trying to help others pursue God, that I can't feel like that. And so this song, even though, like you said, it's not a Christian song at all, they're not a Christian band, but it's one of the beautiful things I think about music is that we can all connect to it in a different way and see different things. And so for me, every time I hear those words, like, you know, God gave you style, he gave you grace. Like, grace is the biggest element of the Christian faith. And so take that and put a smile on your face. Let that just be a reminder that even though like things stink, life sucks, I feel that all the time. I can carry on because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not my favorite song, I think, off this album. I think maybe Clocks or In My Place, maybe, or Warning Sign, or one of those songs might be it. But it's still a damn good song of theirs. And yeah, it's weird to like be nostalgic about Coldplay, because they still seem like a relatively new band, but they've been going for a while now. So, you know, it's not crazy that they would change their sound after, you know, more than two decades. So yeah, there you go. But
I think that's true. You consider this album is 23 years old. It came out in 2002. Of course, we're going to be nostalgic for it. You know, it was so long ago. But also, man, it's really hard to believe that album is 23 years old. One thing I liked is you were like trying to think of your favorite song from that album, and you named like three or four songs. And then as I'm thinking of like, well, here's another three or four songs that were also on this album that could also be my favorites. And I think that just goes to speak to what they were doing musically at that point in time. Like, I think Amsterdam is like one of the greatest songs that they've done. And you didn't mention it, but to me, it's on that list as well. And so I'm always going to be a supporter of Coldplay, especially those early albums. To go back to Austin City Limits, like I talked about earlier, their Austin City Limits that came out, I believe, for this album, or maybe the one after this, is another really, really good performance as well. So check that out. Apparently, I'm just all about public broadcasting, Andrew.
You're doing your part to help. And they need the help these days, for sure. So good for you. Good for you there. But all right. So my next pick here, we're going all the way to Norway for a lady named Ida Maria. This is off of her 2008 album, Fortress Run My Heart. And this is the title of the episode here. This is Oh My God.
Thank you. Thank you for my life. Thank you. Thank you for my life. Put a prize. Put a prize on my soul. Put a prize. Put a prize on my soul. Build a wall. Build a fortress around my heart.
Yeah, so thank you, Rock Band 3, for introducing me to that song there. It's also on the show Big Mouth on Netflix, I think. But yeah, if any song does a good job of capturing the sheer panic of anxiety, it's this one. Not just the nonstop pace, but the treadmill of lyrics running the same thoughts over and over again. Find a cure for my life, put a smile on my face, etc., etc. And when she eventually just screams, oh my God, you think I'm in control, oh my God, it's such a cathartic release. So yeah, I haven't listened to other stuff by Ida Maria, but I really enjoyed the song, Josh.
Yeah, the first time I'd ever heard it was Rock Band as well, so I appreciate you talking about that. I also had never heard anything else from Ida Maria. I love the lyrics of the song. I think again, being a pastor, I always kind of go back to these biblical things. And like, if you just take these lyrics, they kind of sound like something David would have written in Psalms, to be honest with you. Like, so I find some beauty in that. And again, like you said, when she's screaming out that, oh my God, I think it really just kind of creates the flow of where this song was heading. And it really grabbed my attention. It really did.
Mm-hmm. There's also a remix of it with Iggy Pop on backing vocals.
Okay.
And they did a music video where it's the two of them in this like animated world. It's pretty good. They changed the lyrics slightly, but with him in there. But yeah, the both versions are worth a listen to, that's for sure, I think, Josh. So, but all right, what's your next pick there, Josh?
Hey, I think I went back to my wheelhouse on this, something I'm probably a little bit more comfortable with. I went with Thank God I'm a Country Boy by John Denver. I couldn't resist just the joyfulness of this song. And maybe it feels kind of where this fits in our playlist. It definitely is like this jolt. But I picked this because it's just fun. It's this celebration. I love John Denver. He recorded this back in 1974 for the album Back Home Again. But there was also this live version from 1975 that's kind of hit, I think it hit number one on the charts. Once again, Andrew, there's some kind of this foot stomping and fiddles and this chorus.
Oh, you. I am
who I am. I can't get away from that. But it's this course is just fun. It's a reminder that sometimes you just be thankful for who you are.
Well, life on the farm is kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy like me can't hack. It's early to rise, early in the sack. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm. Raising me a family and working on the farm. My days are all filled with an easy country charm. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. And life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. When the work's all done and the sun's setting low, I pull out my fiddle and I rosin up the bow. The kids are asleep, so I keep it kind of low. Thank God I'm a country boy. I'd play Sally Gooden all day if I could, but the Lord and my wife wouldn't take it very good. So I fiddle when I can and I work when I should. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine life, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. Woo!
Man, I love this song. This song just put a smile on my face today, Andrew. It's been one of those mornings. You know it has been one of those mornings for both of us.
Oh,
and
yeah.
This song, man, this song just makes me smile. I don't know about you, and I don't know if you have seen the cinematic masterpiece that is Son-in-Law with Pauly Shore, but I can't help but think of him when I hear this song, of him singing the song in that stupid movie that I've seen a million times. But man, this song, it makes me happy. I'm probably a little bit closer to being a country boy than I am a city boy. I don't have a farm. I own a fiddle. I've never played it. I don't know why I own one. But this song, it makes me happy. And I think John Denver is one of those artists that I'm a little worried that over time is kind of this like folky sound that he had goes out of style, that we're going to lose just a little bit of how awesome John Denver's music was. To me, I get happy. I smile when I hear the song. I can't help but think of the Muppets every time I think of John Denver, and that makes me happy. And so this song, Thank God I'm a Country Boy. I love it. And that's why I chose it.
See, I thought we were going to hear Hillbilly Jim's theme. You don't go messing with a country boy. I couldn't help myself there. I don't go too deep with Denver. I know a bunch of his hits, of course, but he's definitely a guy who was gone too soon. And now, he didn't write this one. It was written by John Summers, who was the banjo and fiddle player in his backing band, hence why the song is so fiddle-based, of course. But yeah, it's a real happy tune to do a little country dancing to, Josh, that's for sure.
Yeah, it has that lyric in here, I'd play Sally Gooden all day if I could, which is this old fiddle tune, which is actually incorporated into the song as well. I think it's incredible. There's a really great cover of this song on another classic album called Urban Chipmunk by Alvin and the Chipmunks. I would encourage you to seek that out. It's by far one of the top covers of all time. Maybe put that for a future list.
I'll jot it down, yeah. But I also recently learned that John Denver is not his real name. It's a gimmick name. His real name is Henry John Deutschendorf Jr. I think I'm saying that right, which doesn't have the same ring to it as John Denver. So it's a good thing he changed it there. And I also learned that for a guy who was so closely associated with Colorado, he wasn't actually from there. He grew up in New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas, and eventually moved to Colorado later in life. But some more facts for you out there, folks, for you to enjoy.
John Denver may have been really bad at geography is the only thing I can think. He has all these songs about different places where he wasn't from. Country, like, I'm from West Virginia. People love country roads most of the places mentioned in West in that song aren't really like what most people in West Virginia would consider West Virginia, but it's still this anthem. And man, I love John Denver. I think choosing a different name was good. That was a good idea. You know, he is John Denver to me, and he'll never be whatever Henry Dusseldorf or whatever his other name was. So good job with that, going with the gimmick name. Good job, John.
All right, so my next pick here, I got some more 80s rock goodness. This is Def Leppard off of their big album Hysteria, and this song is called Gods of War. So that's one of my favorite songs off of Hysteria, partly because it's one of the few deep cuts on the album that hasn't been played to death over the years. And I think, like the rest of the album, it holds up. I mean, the Reagan and Thatcher sound bites in the song are a little out of date, of course, but the song still rips and the message is still relevant. I think there's always going to be room for songs that are anti-war, anti-warmongering. And I think the line that holds up the best is, there ain't going to be heroes. And boy, does that ring true in this day and age. Mm. But yeah, if you only know Pour Some Sugar on Me or Rocket or Love Bites, check out the rest of Hysteria, because it is a classic album for a reason. The producer, Mutt Lange, said he wanted to make hard rock thriller. And I think they delivered in spades, Josh.
Yeah, I love these lyrics. I want to count down to zero, take a ride on the nightmare machine. That's Cody Rhodes' next phase of his career, I believe. He's going to become the nightmare machine. What do you think? No? But yeah, I agree with you. I think that this thing is still this kind of anti-war sentiment. It's not going away. And I don't think it's probably ever going to go away. They're always going to be fighting this. And this idea there ain't going to be heroes. There ain't going to be anything. That resonates. We're fighting with the gods of war, but I'm a rebel. Yeah, that's a great protest line. I'll be honest with you, Def Leppard is not a band that I've explored much at all. This style of music probably wasn't what hit me. You know, I've never really kind of explored this, but I'm going to go back and listen to this album, because it's one of those albums I know it's like one of these, you know, it's considered such a great album that I've just never given a lot of attention to. I love Mutt Lange's production. Mutt Lange famously married to Shania Twain at one point, which again just blows my mind. Good for him. But yeah, this metal idea of doing this, like, you know, hard rock metal thriller, that's a great idea, and I'll have to give it a listen more.
Yeah, this album and the one before it, Pyromania, is a really strong 1-2 punch there. And there's a 4-year gap between them, which, you know, in the 1980s music world, that's forever. That's a lifetime. But they spent a long time in the studio with Mutt, and also, you know, Rick Allen, the drummer, lost his freaking arm in a car accident. So yeah, it took a while to come out, but in the end, they delivered, I think, a real grand slam of an album. All right, Josh, what is your last pick of the episode?
So the last song I picked is, this is the other Christian song I picked on this list, but again, not a Christian song that I think a lot of people, when they hear this, they're going to be like, this isn't what I expected. It's this song called The Silence of God by this artist named Andrew Peterson. If you don't know Andrew Peterson, and I assume most people listening to this probably don't know Andrew Peterson, he's one of these rare singer-songwriter types who, he kind of feels like this poet more than just a musician. He's written some like children's books and novels and essays. There's this whole series called The Wing Feather Saga, that's really popular right now that he wrote. But what I like most about him is he's best known for like crafting songs that are brutally honest and tender and soaked. And this is one of those songs.
It's enough to drive a man crazy. It'll break a man's faith. It's enough to make him wonder if he's ever been sane. When he's bleeding for comfort from thy staff and thy rod, and the heaven's only answer is the silence of God. And it'll shake a man's timbers when he loses his heart, when he has to remember what broke him apart. And this yoke may be easy, but this burden is not, when the crying fields are frozen by the silence of God.
Andrew, I chose this particular track, Silence of God. It's from his 2004 album, Love and Thunder. And this whole record kind of has this earthy kind of acoustic feel. But this song stands out because it names something that maybe most of us have felt that have any sort of faith. And maybe we haven't said out loud, but this idea that sometimes God feels quiet. You can even hear that in the production. The instrumentation is stripped back. It's mostly acoustic guitar and piano and a little bit of strings. There's no big drums, no wall sounds. And Andrew's voice is kind of left almost bare. There's this space in this recording, this space that kind of mirrors that theme. And the silence isn't just in the lyrics, but it's also in the sound. It forces you to kind of like lean in and almost like you're sitting with a friend who is like refusing to offer you cheap comfort, but he is also like refusing to leave your side. Andrew, I picked this song because it means a lot personally to me. A few years ago, shortly after my wife and I got married, I went through a stage of serious anxiety and depression, like couldn't get out of bed for weeks at a time. And so I connect with this one on a deeper level because I've wrestled with all those things. There's been seasons where I've prayed and I felt like my words hit the ceiling and they just come crashing back down. And, you know, if anybody's ever been there, like you can know how heavy that feels. And so in this Christian tradition and theologically, there's a name for this that I didn't even know about at the time. I learned later on as I studied, and it's called the dark night of the soul. And it's this experience when God feels hidden, not because he's gone, but because we're learning to walk by faith when our feelings go dark. And that's what this psalm is about. And man, this psalm just, it hits me in all kinds of ways. Andrew, when he wrote this psalm, he was going through this same feeling. And so he went to stay in this monastery in Kentucky. There's a line in verse 3, it says, "There's a statue of Jesus on a monastery knoll in the hills of Kentucky. And he's kneeling in the garden as silent as a stone, and all his friends are sleeping and he's weeping all alone." And so he remembered he was going through this, and he's walking and he sees this actual statue. And so he wrote this psalm coming out of that. And so this psalm, it means a lot to me. This is what my faith is. My faith is wrestling with dark parts of my life. And so I was just wanted to share some of this with you, share some of this with the audience, because this is who I am.
How do I follow that? Jesus Christ, man. God. I like how we have these songs that talk about, you know, doubting the existence of God in the wake of tragedy, and it's so heavy. And then we have songs about the radio and playing the fiddle and robots. It's a real back and forth swing going on here. But yeah, this is a real heavy song. It's beautifully written, but heavy. And I don't have the connection to it that you do, obviously, but I could definitely see how a song like this can really resonate with people going through something that you went through, Josh, for sure.
Yeah, and I think there's hope in this. It's this, and that's what I hang on to, like the silence of God that he preaches, that he talks about here, and that we, you know, that as Christians we wrestle with. It's not abandonment. You know, it's if you look at it as like this Easter story, like that silence of God is that Saturday, you know. Jesus resurrected on Friday. Or Jesus is crucified on Friday, resurrected on Sunday. And so the silence of God is that Saturday. It's that space between kind of death and resurrection. And I think that's what a lot of us as people of faith feel at times, is this feeling of like, oh, I'm between these two things, and it's hard, and it feels empty, and it feels difficult. But that's why this psalm matters to me. It tells the truth about that silence. But I think it also still kind of whispers that truth that that Miles Minnick song talked about, is God's still at work even when he's quiet. And the silence always, for me, it has always given way to hope. And that's why, like, I am a pastor. That's what I do now.
Mm-hmm. I also want to bring up the names of some of the other songs on the album. Canaan Bound, Let There Be Light, Pillar of Fire. My favorite, though, is Serve Him. And Him is spelled H-Y-M-N. So a little heavenly wordplay going on there. I like it, Josh.
Yeah, and that song, again, this is like the most prototypical Pastor Josh album ever. Lots of that kind of folky, stomp, clap, whatever. But yeah, that song is really, really good as well.
All right, so my last pick here, this is from this year, actually, 2025. Garbage put out a new album called Let All That We Imagine Be the Light. And this is the last song on the album. This is called The Day That I Met God.
Despondent and devoid of reason, all my common sense was left behind. It sounds so weird to say out loud, my ego and my pride. And so there I was, face to face.
So similar to Hysteria, this album took a while to make because Shirley Manson had hip replacement surgery, she had writer's block, and her dog died. So not a fun time, but they pushed through, and this song is, I think, the best one on the album. It's got this real spacey, cinematic feel to it. And so there I was, face to face with God. It was everyone I'd ever loved, and I didn't say a word. Let's call it what it was. It was everything I'd ever wanted. That's a very beautiful sentiment. Now, I will say, though, the song is based on Shirley's recovery from surgery, and she references the drug Tremadol, which is a painkiller. I found God in Tremadol. And there's the line, my life fell apart the day that I met God. So is it about addiction? Is it about finding some sort of peace and contentment? Maybe both. It leaves you with some questions. It's not so cut and dry, Josh, but I think it's still, regardless, a very incredible song.
So, Andrew, when I heard that this album was recorded, this song was recorded after Shirley had come out of surgery for that hip replacement, it made me think about my own experiences with surgery. I don't know if you ever have gone under, but you know, a few years ago, I had a kidney replaced. I had this kind of rare kidney disease that we didn't know, and it was killing me. And that as I was coming out from under surgery, as I was coming out of anesthetic, there's this weird feeling that you feel that I kind of get from these lyrics. Even the way that she's singing, the way it feels, it just kind of meshes with that. And so yeah, I love this song. I think I like the open-ended nature of it. Is this a song about the, you know, is it about addiction, is it about something else? But yeah, it's a real this song makes you think. I also read too that this, the vocals here, was maybe even like the original demo that she recorded. And so this was recorded while she was still in recovery. And I think that kind of leads to this like intimate like depth that's happening here, kind of this emotional depth. It's not really, it's kind of like just this reflection on personal struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she recorded this in her bedroom is the story that I read, which, you know, can't get more personal than that, really, you know? So, yeah, there you go. But yeah, a real strong way to end the album. And they're on tour right now, Garbage. It's going to be their last North American headlining tour, I believe, because, you know, of the state of the industry, really. It's a sad reality, you know. It does take a lot of money to tour, and you hope that you can get that money back through tickets, because album sales aren't going to do it, unless you're Taylor Swift or whatever. But, yeah, Garbage, they've been around a long time, and they're, you know, they're getting close to hanging up the Spurs, I think. It is what it is, Josh, unfortunately.
That's sad. It's just the reality of, like you said, that world we live in with the way that the music industry is. And support artists, guys. Buy music. Go see shows. Support them so we can continue to have great music.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that was the episode. Those were our picks. And Josh, I'm so happy we did this. I'm also happy it's over.
Oh, my gosh.
Because this was the podcast equivalent of the story of Job. There were so many delays in scheduling. There were so many technical issues just to record this episode today. It was driving the both of us nuts. We couldn't believe how many obstacles were put in our way just to do a stupid show about music. But regardless, we did it. We got it done. It's over. And if you're not emotionally scarred for life, I'd love to have you back on. Maybe we'll do Oh My God 2, Jesus Boogaloo. How about that?
You know, I'm for it, man. I love music. Music's one of my passions. And, man, I love doing this with you. I had a blast.
Any plugs you want to give, go right ahead.
Support public broadcasting.
There you go. Nice and succinct, yeah. All right, yeah, Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. That's where all the other shows are. VoicesOfWrestling.com. Previews, reviews, articles, things like that. Blue Sky at Music of the Mat and at Just Andrew on Blue Sky. If you want to leave a comment about this episode, share your picks, voicesofwrestling.com/discord. I'm in there. Josh is in there too, of course. That's also where I post the Spotify playlist for each episode. And of course, make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple, Spotify, or your player of choice, and leave a nice rating and review. All right, Josh, the playout song for today. We had Queens of the Stone Age earlier. Let's go out with Queen, singular. This is the closing track off of their third album, Sheer Heart Attack. This is In the Lap of the Gods Revisited. Thanks again, Josh.
Thank you, Andrew.
You can do it. You can do it. You can go and set it free.
But that's not true.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? And are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.